Did everyone receive an index card? If you did not receive one, if you'll just raise your hand, Paul will be glad to get one to you. You will need one for the lesson today. Can you see it? It's out there. Maybe I can see it because I once was young, now I am old, so I'm a little bit closer to it. I have a question for you this morning, and it's the most basic of questions. What's the goal? And if somebody asks you, what would you tell them? What's the goal? Now, this is a test to see how good you are at following directions. Take your index card, turn it to the lined side of the index card, and somewhere in the top left corner of the index card, make a little note to yourself as to what you think the goal is. What's the goal? Just for future reference for yourself, to know what you thought the goal is. Who needs more time? While some of you are still working on that, I want to ask the rest of you, what do you think the odds are that all of us now have the same answer in the top left corner of our card? Some people are laughing at that question. Well, let's reduce it a little bit. What if we only took the born-again people in the audience and asked them all the questions? What do you think the odds are that all of the answers are identical in the top left corner of their card? Well, let's reduce it even smaller. Let's make it only the born-again people that are really old, like me. What do you think the odds are that all the answers in the top left corner are the same? I'll say it again for you in a different way and let you rethink. And right underneath that answer that you've already put, if you need to redefine it now, I'll emphasize the word the. What is the goal? Now you're going to be in trouble in a minute if you don't write down anything, so I'm just warning you ahead. Okay, now here's where we get to the raise of hand things, where you're going to have to confess your sins to everybody. How many of you did not answer yet? You're still working on it. Is there anybody who hasn't answered yet? That's fine. Raise your hand. If you haven't answered yet, just put your hand up. How many don't know what the goal is? Put your hand up. Oh, good. Everybody's claiming they have an answer, and everybody claims they know an answer. It may or may not be the right one, but at least I've got everybody on board now, right? Everybody has an answer. Okay. How many of you answered with a thing or a quantity of things, like the goal is retirement, or the goal is $1 million, or the goal is happiness? Did anybody put a goal that's a thing? Well, nobody used a noun. That's good. There's no things in your answer. Did anybody answer with a place or a destination? The goal is heaven, or the goal is Disney World, or the goal is... Okay, so we've got a lot of places out there. Did anybody answer with a person? The goal is Christ. The goal is God. The goal is... Okay, we got some persons out there. So we do have some nouns. Did anybody answer with a manner of being? Like, the goal is righteousness, or the goal is holiness, or the goal is to walk with the Lord, or the goal is... Okay, we've got some of those as well. So already we know that we don't all have the same goals in mind, right? We haven't defined these clearly enough that we are all on the same page as Christians yet. Now, sometimes what happens with Christians is we mistakenly aim for the benefits that go along with the goal. rather than the goal itself. Now, imagine this morning that this was instead an archery class, and I was teaching you all what we're aiming for. What do you think I would tell you to shoot at in an archery class? The bullseye, the center of the target, wouldn't I? Now, what would you think of me as a teacher if we got together frequently and from week to week I said, well, aim for that outer ring, or aim for the ring that's halfway between the center and the edge, or aim for the instructor if you don't like the instructor? You wouldn't think much of me as a teacher if I didn't teach you to aim for the bullseye. But you know how I know we haven't been real good at that yet? Because we already discovered we don't have the same answers on our cards. You're shooting for your goal. I'm shooting for my goal. Who's shooting for God's goal? And even those of us who think we're shooting for God's goal, we've been shooting for the benefits. We've not been shooting for the goal. I bet a lot of us go to work from day to day with people like that, that shoot for the benefits rather than the goal. Have you ever been to work with people that are working for the paycheck? Did you know the paycheck is not the goal? Have you ever worked with people that are working for the insurance or one of the other benefits? Did you know that was not the goal? You see, at work, we don't even get everybody on the same page so that we're all aiming for the same thing. The goal is the success of who we're working for. But we've been in it for us. My paycheck, my benefits, all the things that are supposed to come along with it if I'm doing a good job, rather than the success of the company. I'm going to use a Bible illustration now. This is not the lesson. This is only the illustration of the lesson. So don't mistake me. Everybody with me? This is only the illustration of the lesson. This is not the lesson. But I want to ask you, and now on the top right side of your card, in the illustration, I want you to tell me what is the goal for this young couple. They've just said their vows, and they are headed off to life together. I want you to tell me on the top right-hand side, the line side of your card, what's the goal? Now that this couple has just said their vows, before we send them off on their honeymoon, we're going to separate them for just a moment, and we're going to talk to each of them privately. And we're going to ask the man, what are your goals? What is the goal? And we're going to do the same thing for the woman. What are your goals? What is the goal? What do you think the odds are that we're going to get the same answer from the man and the woman? Yeah, we feel the honesty, don't we? We're not even on the same page there, maybe. And that brings to focus the reality of what happens to people if one is aiming for a different goal than the other one. That creates some awkward situations, doesn't it? They may not even be bad goals. What if the woman's aiming for one good goal and the husband's aiming for another good goal, but they're not the same goal? What if they just don't know what the goal is? They said something about it in their vows, but they don't realize what they said when they promised. We'll talk more about that. What do you think will happen if one or both of them is aiming for the wrong goal? What do you think the odds are of hitting the bullseye if not aiming at it? You know, sometimes we miss even when we're aiming at the right goal. But the odds go really bad when we start aiming at something that is not the goal. What happens if we aim for one of those byproducts or benefits? I mentioned happiness earlier. What if the man's aiming at, I'm after my happiness? And what if the woman's aiming at, well, I'm after my happiness? Oh boy. Well, his happiness may not be the same as her happiness. And now what will happen? What if we get busy with all kinds of stuff going on around us that's not the goal? What if a man or a woman or both of them get real busy with all the other things, you know, life and kids and jobs and whatever else you can put out there in front of yourself? What if we get busy with all of those things, but none of them is the goal? What's going to happen? Now, that's just the illustration. Let's take a moment to see what God says about the illustration, because if we get an offer that's not in the best interest of the goal, we are going to get in deep trouble not being aimed at the same goal. What is the goal? Well, you know, in Genesis 2, God revealed it in the beginning. Jesus repeats it in the Gospels. It's not good for man to be alone. I'll make a helper suitable for him. A man shall leave his father and mother and cleave to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. That's pretty simple. And that's what God says about it. It's what Jesus repeats about it. But what did you write down so far in the top right-hand corner? What did you write down that the goal is? Is it God's goal for the man and the woman and the marriage? Okay, now turn your card over to the blank side of your card. I hope you've kept it pure and white and clean. And duplicate what you see on the screen on the white side of your card. I want a giant circle in the middle of the white side of your card. And then the letters N-E, real small, down there below that big circle. This is not a drawing of a single neon atom. This is a picture of the goal. And I want to know how many of you think you start to see the goal yet? A few think they start to see it. Look at it just a little bit longer. If this were an archery class, where do you suppose I would tell you to aim? Well, in the middle of the circle. Okay? If the circle were a letter in the alphabet, what letter would it be? O. That's right. One. The goal is one. The answer is one. The two shall become one flesh. That's the illustration. Again, that's not the sermon, but this blank side of the card that you have now made look like this, and I'm going to suggest that you keep it looking like that and take it with you. You're going to want to look at the target later this week and think about some things that we're going to talk about this morning. And you're going to need to see that card to remind you that it says one. Because now I'm going to give you an additional information you can put somewhere else in your notes or on the line side of your card or wherever you want. But this is the goal. Even in the illustration, it is the goal. That's what God said in Genesis 2. That's what Jesus said in Matthew 19. It's what the apostles went out and preached. Look at Ephesians chapter 5, verse 31. For this cause, a man shall leave his father and mother, cleave to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. So the Bible says at beginning, middle, and end, two become one. That is the goal. Now we're going to begin to leave the illustration and we're going to move into the lesson. We're going to think about the broader picture. We're going to think about us and God. God and me. And I'm going to ask the question again, what is the goal? If you'd like to refine your answer on the top left of your card there again, you can refine it a little further. What do you guess now that I am going to tell you that the Bible goal is for God and you? Right, you're going to be able to turn over to the other side of your card and it's going to remind you what the goal is for you and God. Now, while you're still there in Ephesians 5, look one verse further at verse 32. Paul says, he was just using it as an illustration too. He says, the mystery is great. He says, what I'm really speaking in reference to is Christ and the church. So even when Paul preached about it and used it and said, this argument from creation about the way God made things should be communicating something to us about Christ and the church. I've sometimes thought that he calls it a great mystery just because we're not real good at perceiving it. Not because it's been so far hidden and removed from us that it's never been revealed to us. Not that kind of mystery, but just that we're dull and slow and we don't get these things quite as quick as we should. Let me give you some for instances. When Jesus prayed about it in John chapter 17, we referred to this prayer a little bit earlier this morning when we talked about I'm not of this world. Jesus goes on to talk about his influence on his disciples. And I'll pick up in chapter 17, verse 20, where Jesus said, I'm not asking on behalf of these 12 alone, or these 11 alone, but for those also who believe in me through their word, that they all may be one, even as thou, Father, art in me and I in thee, that they also may be in us, that the world may believe that thou didst send me. And the glory which thou hast given me, I have given to them, that they may be one, just as we are one, I in them and thou in me, that they may be perfected in unity, that the world may know that thou didst send me and didst love them, even as thou didst love me. Father, I desire that they also whom thou hast given me be with me where I am, in order that they may behold my glory which thou hast given me. For thou didst love me before the foundation of the world. O righteous Father, although the world has not known thee, yet I have known thee. And these have known that thou didst send me. And I have made thy name known to them and will make it known, that the love wherewith thou didst love me may be in them and I in them. In just those few verses, how many times did he use the word one? And even when he was not using the word one, how many times did he refer to them being together with God as one? And he even mentions about them being together with each other as one. All aiming at the very same single goal of being one. We'll move from there to 1 Corinthians chapter 6 and verse 17. And I'm sorry that we're having to skip from context to context to context. I hate to keep doing that, but we need to get right down to the bullseyes of these, and so I'm just picking them out of passages like this one. In the midst of a discussion about moral living and about sexual morality, it is not surprising that in 1 Corinthians 6:16, Paul brings up, and the two will become one flesh. But then look what he says in verse 17. He moves from the illustration to the lesson. In 17, he says, the one who joins himself to the Lord is one spirit with him. This, I believe, is the shortest verse I can take you to that explains the goal. Joining ourselves to the Lord and being one with Him. That is the goal. But I don't think we get it. I think we aim for the benefits. I think we aim for things that are out on the periphery. Sometimes I think we even aim at temporal things, when what we were supposed to be aiming for is to get back with God. Now, what's it mean to be one spirit with somebody? Because even in the illustration, we know that in married life, lots of folks never get around to figuring out what it means to be on the same page. Never realizing what we were supposed to be aiming at all along, but I once was young and now I'm old. We've learned a few things, haven't we? And what do we pick up from those things that we have learned and from what God has been trying to teach us? Well, then you turn over to a passage like Romans chapter 8, and it starts talking about people who are led one of two ways. They're either led by the flesh or they're led by God's Spirit. And if we want to be the sons of God, the passage says we're going to have to be led by that Spirit. So as I tell myself, well, the real goal is to be one with God, I'm going to define that a little further and say, well, it sounds like from Romans chapter 8, what it means is I have to be on the same page with God. And I don't mean the page of the Bible. I have to be on the same page with God. I have to be one spirit with the Lord. And if need be, we can revisit in Ephesians. Because in chapter 2, he starts to develop it, that the whole purpose that Christ has died for and brought together all of these people, Jew and Gentile alike, is so that they can be one spirit dwelling place for the Lord. And then you know how chapter 4 starts out in Ephesians. How many times does he use the word one? One body, one spirit, one Lord, one faith, one baptism, one God, one Father, over all and in all and through all. One, 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 one. And he says, be diligent to preserve the unity of the Spirit. What is the unity of the Spirit? Well, it's all designed to be one. It all cooperates together with one. And I'm supposed to be diligently aiming to keep it together as one. Now that works in the illustration as well. How am I supposed to be working in my marriage? The two of us as one. How am I supposed to be seeking the Lord? How is the Church of Christ supposed to be seeking the Lord? The mystery is great. But I'm speaking with reference to Christ and the church. The two shall become one. This is the goal, at least that's what the verses seem to say to me. I'll leave it to you as you go home in your private studies. If you disagree with this lesson after it's over and you think you've found some goal in the Bible that exceeds this goal, oneness of spirit with God, I'll be happy for you to call me and straighten me out. I would love to know what the goal is, because I don't want to be shooting at the wrong circle. But that's what these passages seem to say to me. As Jesus prays, as the apostles teach, as the illustrations bear out, as even God's work in creation from the beginning bears witness to this fact, I think getting on the same page with God again, becoming one, is the goal that I'm supposed to be aiming at. And that's why the Old Testament will say things like, created in the image of God, made in His likeness. Or why in the covenants he'll say things like, I will be your God and you will be my people. Or when he says in Leviticus, you shall be holy for I am holy. Or in Jeremiah where he says, if you're going to boast about anything, boast that you understand and know me as your God. Or in the New Testament where Jesus said, you must be born of the Spirit. You must be born again. Where the apostles will teach this unity of the Spirit to preserve it. Imitators of God as beloved children, he calls it. Or as Jesus said, God is Spirit, and so those who worship him must worship in spirit. Or like Peter repeats from Leviticus, like the one who called you, you shall be holy in all your behavior because he is holy. Aiming at the same things God has been aiming at all along. Or as Romans 8 puts it, when our spirits start to agree with God's Spirit, that what we are both anxiously longing for is the glory of God. And in the Romans 8 passage, the glory of God is the mercy that extends immortality to all of us. It offers us forever life again after we've messed up and ruined this one. That's what God anxiously longs for, to be back in covenant relationship with his people. Is that what we're longing for? Is that what we want? Have I persuaded anybody? Are we in agreement about the goal? Is the goal one? By a show of hands, has anybody been persuaded that it looks like the Bible is saying the goal is one? Okay, we've persuaded a few. Did you know the Bible tells people that understand the goal how to get there? Do you remember what Jesus said about the greatest two commandments? What are the greatest two commandments? The first one is love God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. Can you see any connection between that commandment and the goal of oneness? Plug it into the illustration, plug it into the lesson. Think about you and God. How can that first great commandment be love God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength if the goal is to be one? Would that fit? That fits perfectly. Well, and then with each other, what's the second great commandment? To love your neighbor, to love others as yourself. Well, if unity, if oneness is the goal, then does it make perfect sense that the second great commandment is you need to do that with each other? Not just your husband or your wife. Please go to the passage in Mark with me. There in chapter 12, starting at verse 28, there's a couple of very important points that Jesus and the scribe come to. When asked, Jesus answered, the foremost of all is to love the Lord God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. And he said, the second's like it, love your neighbor as yourself. He says, there's no other commandment greater than these. So it sounds like Jesus is referring him to the goal. But I'll leave it to you to decide that. The scribe says to him, right, teacher, you have truly stated. Well, good. I'm glad to know Jesus was right in his answer. It's always great to when the scribe says, yeah, he's right. But look how he starts his Deuteronomy quote. He says, you have truly stated, he is, who is he? He's one. Because that's the way the Deuteronomy text reads a couple chapters earlier before, love God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. He is one. And there's no one else besides him. Oh, so this is one of those one and only deals. Oh, there can't be other gods. There can't be other me's. There can't be other stuff. There's only one. And because there's only one, you shall love him with all your heart, soul, mind, and understanding, strength, etc., however your translation reads, and you'll love your neighbor yourself. But then look at what the scribe says next. He says, understanding that, verse 33, is much more important than religion. He says, all your burnt offerings, all your sacrifices, all your getting together once a week to tolerate one another or to tolerate the Lord for 45 minutes on Sunday, he says, that don't cut it. He says, understanding that God is one and loving God, that's far above religious practices that we do as Christians and churches. Because the people that love the Lord and are aiming to be one with Him, you know what they start to get right? They start to get right all of their religious practices and all of their sacrifices and all of their offerings and all of their details. Those all get ironed out because everybody's shooting at the same goal. And they're doing it in this way, out of love for the Lord and love for one another. And then look what Jesus says to the scribe in verse 34. Jesus saw that he had answered intelligently, and he says to him, you are not far from the kingdom of God. Wow. When we finally see the real goal and start to understand that the goal is way above the religious practice, and that if we were all shooting for that goal, we would be so much closer to the kingdom of heaven. You're not far. It's God in you, it's you and others, it is this group. How diligently have we been progressing toward the goal? We've been real honest all along in this lesson. Let's continue to be real honest with ourselves. The majority of hands, and it's not any different in most places where I've taught and preached, people are aiming for different things. The larger percentage are aiming for heaven. But I'm here this morning to tell you the gospel truth. Heaven ain't the goal. Heaven's not the goal. And when we shoot for heaven, we miss God. And we do a lot of wrong stuff. Because we're shooting for one of the offspring benefits of aiming for God. And we don't even end up fulfilling the first two commandments, to love God with all our heart, soul, mind, and strength, to love each other as ourselves. Please go home with one answer this morning. Please go as you leave and read a couple of passages for your sake. Read John chapter 17 again and think about what Jesus says about eternal life and about relationship with God. And then go read the letter to the Ephesians. And go hunting yourself with your bow and arrow and look for the goal. See if you spot it in the text. You can also look for what accompanies the goal, but don't make the mistake of saying that's the goal. That's just a side benefit. It's not the goal. How are we doing together about aiming at the goal? And how does that connect to our work this weekend? Well, that is really good news that God says we can be one again. I don't deserve that. You think you do? But there's the whole new beginning that He offers. We can be one again. And so what's He asking me to make? A commitment. You remember from the illustration? What did the young couple do just before the picture was taken? They made a commitment. They said their vows. But God isn't asking us just to say, I do. Because you know what He's going to ask. Do you? And as soon as we're willing to make the commitment to love God and to seek to be one spirit with Him, you know what He's going to ask us to do with the illustration? To share it with anybody that's willing to listen to it. There's hope through Jesus Christ to get back to God. To be one again. To aim for the bullseye. And not for all those other things that miss the mark. God bless you to see it in the text. To walk in faith. And to step out in hope. If you need to this morning, let's stand and sing.